eaten bird nest soup. One, two people have eaten bird nest soup. You can go on over there and sit down. I mean, Chinese food, you may wonder, how's he going to get anything out of this? You watch me. You know what birds do in nests? And we got two people here tonight that have eaten bird nest soup. Only two? Only two people eating bird nest soup? Huh? Have you ever wanted to? You never wanted to eat bird nest soup? Oh, you have. Well, he's driving you, Peter. I'd get another driver if I were you. What do you know about bird nest soup? Well, my Lord, it's 5 a.m. on the East Coast, almost 2 a.m. on the West Coast. What better thing could we talk about than bird nest soup? I'll talk about some bird nest soup. I think it's very interesting. One of the magazines I just love to read is the Smithsonian. I recommend it for everybody. You see, most people think that if you are a Christian, you check your brains at the door of the church and become an idiot. I think Christians ought to know everything. I can get something out of everything. This is a fascinating little article. September 1983. How many of you get the Smithsonian? Two of them. Did you read this article? Well, I'll be damned. On the trail of bird's nest soup. Caves, climbs, and high stakes. Can you possibly, I don't know if we can get it lighted right, but I want to show you something. This is a bamboo or a rope ladder. See if we can pick this one up. See that ladder? Look at it going up in this cave. Keep going up this one. That little old fly-looking spot there, that's a man. That ought to give you some perspective. And he keeps climbing right on up through that hole. Now let's do that again. Get the perspective of a man right there. Go all the way down this rope ladder. Like, there's a man standing. I'm sorry you can't see it on radio. But it must be at least 50 to 1, the height of this rope ladder to the man. Boy, that, I'd like to send my coach up that. With a bed of nails right under it. Starting to come. So you can see the picture starting to show now. In this massive cave. Up. Now, you say, what's this got to do with what you do? Hey, I'm in the business of communicating value. You know what the basic word of religion is? Worth-ship. Contracted. Worship. Very few people that call themselves Christian know anything about worship. The most basic definition, I came to religion from philosophy. Philosophy presupposes it. Religion is that activity motivated by your highest and ultimate value. A Chicago newspaper man said, your 5-year-old boy can tell the place your automobile has in your spectrum of values as he watches you wash it on a Saturday afternoon. Everything I do has to do with value. Why I don't give away cheap little gimmicks and take up offerings that way to cheapen God. Worship, worth-ship. 3 times in the New Testament, the word sacrifice is used as an act of worship. One of them is the giving of money. No, I'm ashamed at the way most Christian television evangelists raise money. As if God must be supported by dime store trinkets. I'm on this subject. Anything, I don't care where I go, I'm interested in value judgments. Look at this cave. I mean, they walk in on stuff like those Arabs walked in when they first went into the pyramid. And look at that rope. And some of them, somewhere up about halfway, start wearing out in the dampness of the cave, and somebody finds it out, and they just build another one. And there's somebody lands down here. Look at the size of that man. How would you like to climb that ladder to find a bird's nest for somebody to make soup with? Now, the headline here says, you see, I only do on TV what interests me. I'm the host. I'm paying the bill. The trade behind this delicacy involves both risk and money. Asian epicures and gourmets everywhere think it's worth it. Why shouldn't Christians know everything? They are plucked from high on the walls of enormous caves by men who risk instant death. You two that ate them, do you know how they're made? You know how? You never ate them? You know how bird's nests, for bird's nest soup? How many people thought it was just a pun and didn't really think that there were bird's nests in the soup? Be honest. You just thought it was somebody calling it that. Uh-uh. It's soup made out of bird's nests. Do you know what birds do in their nests? Do you know how these nests are made? How many of you know how these nests are made? They are, am I boring you? They are plucked from high on the walls of enormous caves by men who risk instant death while climbing about on bamboo and rattan ladders. They are protected by armed guards and in some areas barbed wire is used to defend them against theft. From remote islands in the South China Sea and the Indian Ocean, they are distributed in an atmosphere of secrecy like that of the drug trade by operatives who sometimes have high connections and invariably make equally high profits. Now, the other night when we were talking about the great fraud that Darwin got away with, we paid some attention to Wallace, the fellow who really originated the origin of species theory. What he did for bugs. They're not precious gems or priceless antiquities. They're bird's nests. Now, if you've ever gone to eat with Sammy, he can make food look more sensuous and sinful than any person I've ever seen. It's as though he puts up some shell and he doesn't see anybody around him, and he fixes his gaze on that food like a cobra on his prey, and then he begins to stir it up, and then you see his eyeballs begin to roll, and you know, I look at my food, I ordered the same thing he did, and what am I missing in it? Now, Sammy, you are a ready candidate for this gourmet dish. I mean, you're the kind of man they've been looking for. Small, snow white, shaped like a half teacup. The bird's nest is so revered. What else would you talk about at 2 a.m.? Small, well, I could dig that woman out of that grave, couldn't I? Small, snow-white shape. See? That's why I don't have a rubber woman sitting next to me with one of those hairdos that TV evangelist wives get all from the same hairdresser. I mean, what could you ask her to comment on this? Small, so white, snow white, shaped like a half teacup. The bird's nest is so revered in Chinese gastronomy as an aphrodisiac. Preachers, beware. Christians, beware. Of course, Christians don't know what that is anyway, so just keep reading. Some foreign word. As an aphrodisiac? Oh, my God. That's what's wrong. Not enough people eat bird's nests. As an aphrodisiac. Does that mean that something that makes you dizzy? As an aphrodisiac, delicious delicacy, magical booster of health, and purifying sacrament. Boy, that'd make you climb ladders, wouldn't it? That in some parts of the world is virtually worth its weight in gold. My desire to learn about the nest began in a small Chinese restaurant in Hong Kong. You ever been to a restaurant in Hong Kong? I mean, not the ones in the hotels. I mean, there's one over on the island where the girls run around with little baskets and... You thought I was going to say something else. Baskets and steaming stuff right on the basket, and you just take them out of the basket as you eat. You know, the Chinese... You don't take the girls out of the baskets, Peter. You just... As an aphrodisiac, delicious delicacy, magical booster of health, and purifying sacrament. It's getting interesting. Who would have thought bird's nests could do all that for you? My desire to learn about the nest began in a small Chinese restaurant in Hong Kong while I was eating an extraordinary soup. I was the guest of... Am I boring you? Is this in the Bible? It's not in the King James. You think Jesus ate bird nest soup? No, I don't think he did. I was the guest of my friend Fin Dao Chan in a back street of Kowloon. That's off the island. That's on the mainland. So far from the tourist avenues that the restaurant's name was posted in Chinese ideographs only. That's the right place to go. The dining room was extremely comfortable and beautifully decorated. There were figures and fittings of ivory and jade. There was the softness of satins, silks, and tapestries. He must have already had some. There was no written menu. But the dish that Fin Dao ordered was immediately translated for me as, quote, nests of sea swallows with venomous snake and chrysanthemum petals with lemongrass and lotus seeds in the soup. Oh, boy. That'd blow your hat off, Peter. After we had sipped some iron Buddha tea and nibbled on small slivers of preserved goose, who would have thought bird's nests could do all this for you? You know, I can just see Sammy with this. The waiter brought in a large tureen and set it on the side table. At this moment, a strange figure entered the room, half shuffling, half skating toward us in his black velvet slippers. It was... It was... It was... Am I boring you? It was an ancient. You want to get killed, don't you? It was an ancient, bearded Chinese gentleman. Oh. See, it was more exciting if I'd have stopped. Wearing a long, loose scarlet robe, hanging by a red silk cord from his left wrist was a brown leather bag ornamented with silver dragon designs, with something obviously moving inside. As he reached the tureen, the... Am I boring you? As he reached the tureen, the head of a live snake rose from the bag, its forked tongue darting. This is bedtime story time for all you kiddies that go to bed with me every night. With a quick motion, the old man grasped the snake behind the head and deftly squeezing, appeared to spritz into the soup just a drop or two of the venom. You get soup tonight, Ron. You played well. There could be no question as to the extraordinary excellence of this soup. Its brilliant balance of tastes and textures. Its combination of pure simplicity. Now, Craig Lamp has a travel agency. You can sign up for special tours of Hong Kong restaurants when he comes back next week. Its brilliant balance of tastes and textures, its combination of pure simplicity and a rainbow of complicated, sensuous flavors made it the single greatest Chinese dish I have ever tasted. Tiny slivers of snake meat had been shredded into the soup, but the dominant ingredient was the translucent, spaghetti-like, gelatinous and glutinous bird's nests. They gave a sense of luxurious richness to the soup. Cutting through... What else would we... Ain't we having fun? Cutting through the velvet... Now, I mean, you prefer a television evangelist that's got 30 minutes... to tell you that you and you alone must deliver him from his financial Armageddon, running his finger into your eye and telling you that you must help him save the world in the next 30 minutes? Oh, is that what you want? Let's go back to this. Cutting through the velvety flavor was the citrus tang of chrysanthemum petals and lemongrass. While we consumed the soup, Fin Dao talked incessantly. Should have given him a pipe. Unburdening his soul, which this Sunday morning was deeply troubled. I had promised to pick him up at his apartment and take him to lunch, but when I got there, I found him still in bed and in terrible shape. On Saturday night, he'd been out with the bad boys, and everything had gone desperately wrong. They'd drunk too much 110-proof Mao Tai. As the night deepened, so did their troubles. They went to puff a pipe or two in one of the clandestine opium houses. This morning, his body felt like lead, and his spirits were as black as the deepest coal mine. I offered at once to take him to his doctor. No, Fin Dao said. More than anything, I must have some bird's nest soup. Not every preacher can tell you a cure-all for hangovers. Where else? Tell me another preacher that'd tell you that on Saturday, Friday night. And then, you know, I have a merciful heart. I believe that with all these hours on television, I ought to help all people. This morning his body felt like lead. You know, I've experienced that without 110 proof mild tie. And his spirits were as black as the deepest coal mine. My budget does that to me sometimes. I offered at once to take him to his doctor. No, Finn Dow said, more than anything, I must have some bird's nest soup. Help me get dressed. And then we'll go to my favorite place in the restaurant after his third large bowl. Finn Dow was visibly recovering. He'd kill you or cure you, one or the other. He made clear to me the most magical, almost magical esteem in which the Chinese hold the nests of the sea swallow. It was not just a matter of hunger or nutrition. He was convinced that the soup would restore balance and strength to his body and mind and give him long life, virility, and wisdom. Well, I know what I teach will do that for you, with maybe the virility part left out. That's your problem. You stay up my hours and listen to me teach, you won't care about that anyway. So, just long life and wisdom. That's 2 out of 3. In reality, the white nests are not built by swallows. And this is going to help you a bit. I mean, I think, you know, if you're going to... After all, Nixon opened up China. We need to have some cultural knowledge of our brothers and sisters. Can't stand missionaries that look down on people. I see people gagging over bird's nests. Well, just make sure you know what kind of bird's nest it is. In reality, the white nests, now this is what they look like. See them? Look here. See those little nests? Look at them. Get in here close. And these are the little white nest swiftlets. I wish you could show this on radio. See those little nests hanging on that cliff? See them? Little white nests. In reality, the white nests are not built with swallows, but by one particular small bird belonging to the family of swifts. Because it is of its comparatively small size, the bird is known as a swiftlet. More specifically, as the edible nest or white nest swiftlet. Well, now breathe a sigh of relief. They don't just go out and find an old robin's nest or a sparrow's nest or any old nest that serves as bed and toilet at the same time. I mean, you know, we're starting to get a little bit enlightened. You know, everybody thinks that if they're not like you, they're weird. I flew into Formosa, when it was still called Formosa, from Hong Kong, trying to recover from the experiences I shared with you last night of God being confused about clothing. And I was sick. And I was flying to Korea, but I was so sick I couldn't keep going, so I deplaned in Taipei. There was no reservation to anywhere, so the only place I could get was an old hotel in the native quarter. I was sick there for 4 or 5 days. Finally, I started coming out of it. And I'd grown a few days stubble. My hair hadn't been cut since the Philippines. So I went down to the street, and there was a barbershop on the street. I've told this before to some of you, but I got new people around. So I went in. It was a native quarter, so they didn't understand English, and I didn't understand their Chinese. So I got in a chair. He had a lady barber, place full of ladies. And I made all kinds of gestures of what I want, and they wrapped me up, and I didn't know what was going to happen to me. Pretty soon, some Chinese lady came in with a little baby, very young. Brought him over, and he took one look at me, just went into screaming, caterwauling fits. They laughed, quieted him down, and it'd bring him back again. And he'd take one look at me and just go screaming crazy. They'd laugh their head off and then bring him back again. Look at the funny man. He had never seen anything as awful looking as me. He'd never, obviously, ever seen a white person. And I looked awful to him. See, we think everybody else is different. If that baby could have talked, I would have been the missing link to him. Because of its comparatively small size, the bird is known as a swiftlet. It builds its nests primarily in sea caves, although some swiftlets nest in inland areas far from the coast. It feeds by swooping through the air, catching flying insects. When the male is ready to start building the nest, he picks a high, safe place, and out of his mouth comes a secretion from his now swollen salivary glands. Oh, that's awful. Well, how many of you eat gizzards? You know what passes through gizzards? Huh? Even Sammy can't get excited about gizzards. Sammy says, "Don't tell me, because I love gizzards." Is that what you're saying, Sammy? Out of his mouth comes a secretion from his now swollen salivary glands. This paste, or nest cement, as it is called, emerges from his mouth in a continuous, thin strand of soft spaghetti. He weaves it, swinging his small head this way and that, into a nest shaped like a shallow half cup. Well, now, it's nice to find out that the nest comes from this end of the bird. Amazing what a couple of inches will do. Am I boring you? I mean, it's 2:25 in the morning. As the nest dries, all of the strands stick solidly together, and the entire nest is glued firmly to the rock wall. In this little haven, the female lays her eggs and rears her young for about 2 months. As Fin Dao took each mouthful, he meditated on the tremendous struggles of this tiny bird against the forces of ocean storms and monsoon winds. For the centuries, the Chinese believed that to create the nest, the swiftlet absorbed nothing more than the wind-blown foam from the sea. Fin Dao believed that he was absolutely absorbing with the soup the iodine of seaweed, the phosphorescence that lights up the southern seas at night, mineral salts, and other mysterious natural elements. He consumed them with a concentrated essence of the devotion, endurance, power, strength, and virility of this extraordinary bird. And look, I'm teaching you faith. And a simple little act of faith, God in response endows you with his life. Smart people are figuring out where I'm going. Look at this guy climbing that ladder right there. How'd you like to climb? Carrying a little bamboo torch with a flame on it. And when he gets up here in the dark roof of the cave, he just waves it around to see if he can find those. Risking his life. He absolutely believed that he was consuming concentrated essence of the devotion, endurance, power, strength, and virility of this extraordinary bird. It was at this point that the idea came to me of dropping all my other plans to devote myself to an exploration of the white nest swiftlet and the worldwide trade in its nests. I began looking for bird's nests in the restaurants of Hong Kong. On Patterson Street in the Causeway Bay District of Hong Kong Island, I found a restaurant, the Siam Bird's Nest, which served them in about 40 different ways. Common bird's nest recipes included the salty soup as a separate course before the main meal, dumplings and a sweet dessert soup garnished with fruit. It doesn't look bad either. There it is. There's a sweet dessert soup made with watermelon balls and bird's nests, because the nest is soluble, served in a Hong Kong restaurant. About 40 different ways. At the restaurant, one could also buy beautifully packed boxes of whole bird's nests. The price fluctuates according to the economy, the year's harvest, and the quality of the nests. At that time, the price for top quality nests in U.S. dollars came to about $4,000 per pound. How'd you like to spoon that in? $4,000 a pound. You thought I was shortchanging you on soup over there, Ron. The most valuable nests are the white ones, especially those collected before the female lays her eggs. See, right after they've been... Another species, the black nest swiftlet, provides nests that contain their own black feathers. But they're edible only after thorough cleaning. These are far less expensive. See? With everything, there's... See? There's me, and then there's those black feather evangelists. You learn a little bit, you get discriminated. That's what I oppose with these people trying to put me in the pot with all the rest of them. I ought to be in there with those black feather bird's nest evangelists. I don't want any eggs laid on me. I'm pure white. They lay eggs every Sunday. I listen to them. Am I boring you? We're running out of time. We got an interesting subject tonight. I may never get back to it again. I started talking with the owner of the restaurant, Wong Zeming, inquiring why he continued to use the name Siam for his restaurant when the name of the country had been changed more than 40 years ago to Thailand. Well, I didn't think so. They're still calling it Siam down in Pantages Theater here in Los Angeles right now, aren't they? Yeah, King and I playing with Yul Brynner. I mean, everybody ought to see that once. Why don't some of you Christians sneak out and sin a little? Get intelligent. He replied that his family had a contract for more than 100 years directly with the kings of Siam, those same kings who were the subjects of Anna and the king of Siam and the king and I. His family for more than 100 years had a contract with the kings for the rights to the harvesting of birds' nests in some of the great caves on the Thai coast. Since the contract with the royal family was in the name of Siam, he did not feel he should change it. It was most probably the Chinese who recognized the edibility of the nests of the white nest swiftlet. You see, they didn't just get real hungry one day and find a bird's nest in a field that if you use enough spice, you might make flavorful. These, do you realize that somebody had to climb one of these dangerous places to find the first one? I mean, doesn't that sort of puzzle you? Who first figured out these were edible? By the way, you know, they're not as bad as they were when we started out. I'm sure that bird's got less halitosis than a lot of cooks. Although a firm date or instance has not been documented, one particular account tells of a Chinese man named Hao Ying, who had settled in Siam about 1750. He apparently, I'm glad that it's not 1850, or I'd think that it had something to do with lost tribes. He apparently soon discovered that the sea swiftlets built their nests and bred in several key caves of the offshore islands, and that the nests were of an immaculate white material, soluble in hot water. The little bird was thought to be so pure that it derived all its nourishment from the air and from sea spray. Its name in the local language... By the way, some of you eat chicken. Do you know what goes into a chicken? Some of you eat pork. Escargot. Just, you know, give these nests a chance. Its name in the local language was wind-eating bird. It was said never to have been seen taking any form of solid food. Perhaps it was to be expected that a performance so ethereal should attract such dauntless perfectionists about food as the Chinese. Hao Ying must have seen the value of such a commodity, for in 1770, he went to visit the King of Siam with a proposal. He presented all his possessions, including his wife, his children, and his slaves, along with 50 cases of tobacco. He pledged all of them to the King of Siam in return for the rights to collect all the birds' nests and all the caves on two islands. Wives are useful. The king agreed. Within a few years, Hao Ying had a virtual monopoly on the birds' nest trade and had become immensely rich. Later, realizing the great value of these edible nests, the Siamese crown took over and Hao Ying released his monopoly. A corps of hereditary collectors was created, and it was perhaps through this administrative machinery that eventually the contract was signed with the Wong family at the Siam Bird's Nest Restaurant in Hong Kong. I then decided to go to Bangkok, where some of the finest nests are found in the huge caves near the Bay of Phang Nga. I wanted to learn what happened to these excellent nests and learned that a major company now manages the collection and distribution, with most of the nests going to Hong Kong to be sold. Ask an official. If I could acquire a few of the top quality white nests for my personal use and was given a wooden box about the size of a standard shoebox filled with nests in perfect condition. Do you realize people stayed up late to learn this? I'm boring you. We weighed them on a laboratory scale and they came to a shade better than 2 pounds. I could have these at the wholesale price, a little below what we charge Hong Kong, for $2,000 in U.S. currency cash, which was worth a lot of money, U.S. currency cash, in those days in Bangkok. The nests are so light that you get about 50 to a pound. Takes about 6 nests, plus quite a few other ingredients, to prepare a tureen of soup for 4 people. Now, this is what they look like. Here, this guy perilously climbing the wall with his stick, looking for a nest. And then they have to be handled very delicately when they pull them loose from the wall. This one they got before any eggs were laid in it, freshly made with the male. In search of the ultimate recipe for my newly acquired investment of Bird's Nest liquid capital, I consulted a number of top cooks in Bangkok. Though Thailand produces some of the best bird's nests in the world, it has never accepted the dish as a great specialty and has never incorporated any form of cooked bird's nest into Thai cuisine. However, the King and Queen of Thailand have a superb sense of diplomacy and hospitality. When Queen Elizabeth II paid a state visit, the kitchens of the Royal Palace in Bangkok didn't hesitate to prepare roast beef and Yorkshire pudding. Just in case there should be a visit from a high Chinese diplomat, there does exist in the royal kitchen files a magnificent recipe for bird's nest soup. And here it is, the unofficial royal recipe of Thailand for bird's nest soup in the September 1983 Smithsonian. Prepared with the purest, whitest Thai nest. Well, he says, I've since made this soup in my own kitchen in New York, and it's worked extremely well for me, both with the top-grade nests I brought back from Bangkok and with the less expensive nests I've bought in Chinese-American food shops. The prices mentioned may have given the impression that bird's nests can be afforded only by the very rich. The top prices are paid only for the very limited quantities of absolutely perfect nests. See? Or you can get ordinary evangelist fare. Other grades, including packages of broken bits of nests called dragon's teeth, are sold at relatively affordable prices. It seemed that most of the shipments that go into Hong Kong, and they come not only from the coast of Thailand, but from Malaysia, Indonesia, the Philippines, and Vietnam. What are you waving at me for? I haven't got the soup made yet. It seemed that most of these shipments were shrouded in secrecy. Listen to this. It was hinted that one man was the world kingpin of the international traffic in edible nests. He was said to have contracts with governments, kings and princes, and private owners of islands, and have a great deal of money to throw around. He was said to control his invisible empire from a minuscule office in Kowloon in Hong Kong. Eventually, with the help of friends, I did get briefly to talk to such a man on the condition that I did not publish the address of his office and that I simply call him Mr. Fred. Now look here, by the way, is a Hong Kong bird's nest shop. Look at all of them back here in these jars. Look at all the bird's nests. See the different colors, some of them white and some of them not so white. Here in Thailand, they're cleaning the feathers out of the poor grade. Those aren't very white, are they? Mr. Fred. His office was in a narrow, nondescript back street at the front of an entirely inconspicuous small building. The main door was steel-plated and opened only by advance appointment. Both the waiting room and the inner office were filled with a chaotic jumble of samples of items for sale. Mr. Fred was a small, round, Chinese gentleman of indefinite age, educated in Europe with a near-perfect command of English. He was impeccably well-dressed and positively exploding with energy. He must eat the nest. Opinions and a torrent of talk. I asked, why so much secrecy surrounding the trade in bird's nests? His smile was almost fatherly. The tone of his voice ever so slightly condescending as he answered. For the same reason that there is secrecy about shipments of gold bars. Gold is now worth about $400 an ounce. The very best grades of bird's nests are getting close to $300 an ounce. Every time we move a shipment from one warehouse to another, or from a packing room to the airport, we face the danger of hijacking. I ask about the barbed wire. If you were the owner of an island, he said, let's say a remote island with caves where the swiftlets have been nesting perhaps for hundreds of years, and you had a contract with me for the delivery of so many thousands of nests per year, you'd be extremely worried about the security of your island. It might be invaded at any time by poachers intent on taking the nests regardless of the consequences or the impact on the birds or the caves. Since we have a contract with you and therefore financial interest in your island, I'm prepared to provide you with various means of defending it. Boy, they're serious about bird's nests. Because they translate into value. He explained the high prices. All over the world, it's a seller's market for bird's nests. Chinese chefs in Chinese restaurants, however small and insignificant, want to be able to have a bird's nest soup available at least to special order on their menus. And Mr. Fred added, the supply never catches up with the demand. In fact, the demand for bird's nest has pushed prices so high that in 1979, A ship was deliberately sunk off the coast of the Philippines so the owners could collect insurance amounting to $11.5 million on its cargo, 9 tons of bird nests. But now I was anxious to visit the birds themselves. So I planned a journey that would take me to Malaysian Borneo, where I could visit the Nia Caves in Sarawak, and then go on to Sabah to the famous Gomantong Caves. But first, there was a briefing with the government officials to control the harvesting of birds' nests in the state of Sabah. And then he goes through all of that, and Lord Medway's studies of this strange bird. Lord Medway found the bird had a skill even greater than any for which it had been venerated. It can navigate in flight in the pitch-black darkness of the deepest recesses of the caves by echolocation. The bird emits sounds, rather like pebbles rattling in its throat. These sounds echo back from the rock walls and assist the bird in finding its nest. I was looking forward to finding this immaculate, magical bird at Gomantong. I felt an extraordinary excitement as the small boat set out from Sandakan to cross the bay. After docking and a 14-mile drive, we walked the last few miles through rainforest. We entered the main cave, and it was huge. And here it is. The Gomantong Cave in Borneo. That's the first one we looked at. Am I boring you? I'm glad I got a church that's interested in things. We entered the main cave and it was huge. The light was dim, coming only from several shafts to the outside. The odor was strong. The ground felt like large, soft mounds of loose soil. I realized it was a carpet of guano, a mixture of bird and bat droppings. Bird and bat droppings, Sam. What guano is. We sank in it up to our ankles as we walked forward, and the surface appeared flecked with dark gold specks that glittered and seemed to move. A closer examination revealed they're walking in this stuff now. A closer examination revealed that these specks were a moving sea of predatory cockroaches burrowing under the surface and patrolling on top for anything that fell. A fledgling bird or an injured adult stood no chance of survival on the ground. The light shaft above us was suddenly filled with swiftlets taking off from their nests as a pair of white-crowned hornbills swooped in on a raid. There were also thousands of bats. I mean, not only are they climbing these ropes, that's where they go to climb them. That's what they fall in if they fall. It's a question of value, folks. I mean, some people will put out when they value something. Well, I have no sympathy with people who talk Christianity. It's supposed to be a value situation. Nobody should listen to me. Doesn't believe that the truth that we're communicating as we teach the way of life worth more than bird's nests. Very few Christians would do this for God. They do it for bird's nests. Am I getting through? The light, wait a minute. There were also thousands of bats, and we observed large centipedes, crabs and spiders, as well as snakes and an occasional scorpion. Now, if they're going to do a sequel to Raiders of the Lost Ark, why don't they open with a guy climbing these ropes with close-ups of all this on the ground, and then have a rope start to break? There were thousands of bats, and we observed large centipedes, crabs, and spiders, as well as snakes and an occasional scorpion. There were several long bamboo and rattan ladders hanging 200 to 300 feet. You know, 300 feet is the length of a football field. From wooden staves wedged tightly into crevices in the limestone of the cave. Several nest collectors were climbing these ladders, carrying flashlights to locate the nests. They used special tools for gently grasping and loosening the nests, which they carefully put into rattan baskets attached to pulleys. I don't care whether I'm talking about, look here again, I don't care whether I'm talking about Fino Fino Panama hats. Somebody sits poised over a little old knob and weaves for 2-3 months. Or these bird's nests. Life involves dedication to things of value. And life's choice is figuring out where the highest values lie. Most people never figure it out. Few collectors have fallen to their deaths. Well, I'm glad to know that. Which tells us what tremendous athletic skills they've developed. The ladders are replaced every year, but old ones are left in their rotting conditions, possibly to discourage would-be poachers who don't know the difference. There are always guards to protect the caves. We watched this incredible spectacle and admired the ability of one collector who took an hour to climb down the longest ladder. In 1 year, about 1 million nests may be collected in Sabah alone, worth millions of U.S. dollars on the retail market in Hong Kong. The illegal trade accounts for a substantial percentage of these nests. I've learned much about the white nest swiftlet on my journey to the caves, and it is comforting to know that current studies will, we hope, guarantee the future of this remarkable bird. As, now to the punchline. You see, as I teach faith in God, by showing the performance of God in His Word, always coming down on the corner of where He said He'd come. And faith is born, and God gives His response to that faith, placing us in Christ, looking at us as though we're already there, but putting His life in us. You don't ever have to worry about being sold a bill of goods. Poor old Fin Dow, he thought he was getting things that he didn't really get. As to the alleged magical nutritive properties of the nest material as food, I have learned that a chemical analysis showed that it is, quote, of very low nutritive value. I shall not send a copy of this report to my friend Fin Dow Chan in Hong Kong. All that because they believed in something that really wasn't there. God's never ever failed. And my business is getting people to understand what Christianity is really about. Not a bunch of do's and doo-doos. And bird's nests, if you get the later kind, is like most Christianity. A bunch of doo-doo. But the wondrous news of the New Testament is faith in God will produce the action of God to put His life in you. He'll take care of the do's and the don'ts. The wonderful good news of the gospel is faith, and that alone is all it takes. And God takes you as you are. You don't have to walk through guano and climb ladders. Just faith. But I'd like to get an army of Christians that cared as much about the reality of God as armies of gourmets that cared about bird's nests. Isn't that interesting? Come on, I want to hear faith. You got to have faith now. Come on, sing it. You can call over at King's House 1. They'll take the calls there. 1-800-338-3030. If you want to listen to the song in about 5 minutes, I want to know if you're still up at 3 o'clock in the morning And if you're glad you stayed up to hear about bird nest soup.